Welcome to the first edition of On Mindfulness. This show is an offering of the Shasta Resilience Project, a group of trained and certified facilitators committed to bringing mindfulness approaches to our communities here in the North State as ways of increasing well-being and decreasing stress. My name is Sharon Brisolera. I'm your host and coordinator for the Shasta Resilience Project. Each month, we'll be bringing you interviews with wellness practitioners and residents of our community who have found mindfulness and mind-body medicine work useful in their lives and in their work. Our first guest is Doreen Bradshaw, one of the leaders in our community who brought the work of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine to our community. Today, we'll be discussing her initial introduction to the program, how the training and work made its way into our community, what community-level trauma is, and the role of mindfulness in health, wellness, and prevention. So welcome, Doreen, and thank you so much for being our first guest on the radio show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a lot of pressure.
Setting the tone for the whole series. Yeah. Just relax. So I wanted to begin with you just telling us a little bit about yourself, personally, your life, your professionally, whatever you feel is important to frame our discussion.
Sure. So I actually grew up in the Bay Area. And really from a very very involved Portuguese family. I had a lot of family members that were fishermen. So we had a lot, very strong sense of community and as well in regards with our church. So very connected, always supporting kind of each community members with successes and challenges. So very small kind of roots. I grew up, like I said, in the Bay Area. And then I met my husband at Chico State. And we went back and lived in Sonoma County for 6 years and then decided that we wanted a smaller pace of life. So we came up to Shasta County and he actually grew up here. So his family was here. So we've been up here since like 1990. So 33 years now. And I would say as far as my kind of professional experience, I've been working in areas of rural health, healthcare, public health, and community-based development through my career. So I've gotten a little bit of everything, kind of jack of many trades, master of none. So it kind of, I tend to look at, known for more systems thinking and basically putting the pieces of the puzzle together to make things better for our community. So I have been with the Health Alliance in Northern California for 19 years this month. And I love this job. We basically, it's an organization that supports improved system of care, improved health outcomes using a system of care. And so we have a network of community health centers, and then we work to build relationships with other key stakeholders in the small rural and frontier communities they serve. So for rural, bigger is better, and a stronger, louder voice always serves us well if, you know, locally, and then when we do advocacy, et cetera. So I've really enjoyed my work with Hank. Again, worked on a number of initiatives. It's always interesting. There's always something to do to improve health in our communities. So I really feel fortunate that I've had this position and also that all the people I work with, because all of this is about relationships and, you know, whether we're working on an initiative to improve a specific health issue or we're responding to a disaster. Since, you know, as the pandemic or the wildfires, it's all about relationships and be able to move a group of people together in unison.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it also strikes me that from that systems level approach, that often is difficult to generate with organizations that have a very specific focus or mission. There's such a need for that systems level.
Yeah, and I talked to my Hank, there's about 13 of our types of organizations in the state of California. And my urban colleagues and counterparts are always amazed about the level of connectivity, collaboration, and basically moving groups of people together to do things collectively. They can't do that in urban areas because they're much bigger, you know, populations. So I think we have a very unique opportunity. We have lots of challenges, but we have great opportunities to do a lot of really good things.
One thing that I've seen as a rural representative on larger state initiatives is that awareness of the key role of relationship building in rural areas where many people wear many different hats. How have you seen Hank and some of the organizations you work with develop those relationships? How does that happen?
Through a number of ways. We've facilitated a number of health collaboratives or supported them throughout the region. So we helped support Lassen. We've done Siskiyou. We've done the Highway 299 Collaborative. We helped get one going in Nevada County. And of course, Shasta County, we've been doing this actually since 2006. The value of those relationships and, you know, that foundational kind of building block is those people need to meet regularly so they can learn about each other. They can learn about their organizations. They can learn about the things they can do, the things they can't do, whether it's policies and procedures that prohibit them from moving and to do a specific activity. But building those relationships and key, that's how you build relationships and trust. So then when things happen, you're organized together. You know, everyone is moving from a really good place. They know each other. They will do more than probably is requested or needed to make something happen.
Mm-hmm. It just strikes me talking to you, we're doing this as way of talking about how this whole, the Shasta Resilience Project and mind-body medicine came here, but all the resonance between what you're talking about in terms of community building and relationship building and the way that that happens through the Resilience Project. There's such a strong relationship there.
And it's, again, the Shasta Resilience is now a community, its own community of really, you know, the acceptance of trauma, because we haven't, you know, a lot of people keep this in isolation. I would say myself included, and I can talk about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. The acceptance of trauma, feeling in a safe place to say I've been had some trauma, and then relationship to work on it as a community, to name it and help others move through it. So again, it's all about those communities and the relationships that are built.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk about that? It certainly was something I wanted to discuss with you today. That one of the invitations for this model to come here was this recognition of the community level trauma that we all experienced as the result of the car fire. And I am a survivor. I lost my home in the car fire, and I found that framing of community level trauma really helpful. So can you speak to that? That framing, why it's important, and those elements of trauma work that you have found to be most important to address and recognize.
Mm-hmm. Work. I guess I would say it was about the car fire, but it was also about all the other fires that happened in 2018 and 2019. Mm-hmm. It was repeated fear of not just small fires, but big fires. And I mean, my own neighbors, anytime they heard a siren, they would come out or smelled smoke. What's going on? You know, just we knew we had the car fire. We knew we were trying to move through it. People didn't really realize, I think it was pent up emotion that they didn't name or couldn't name at that time. And as we continued to have more experiences of this, and I mean, for me personally, I saw the impact of my neighbors, of leaders that were trying to lead through this, that, you know, I helped support coordination of services at the evacuation centers. And so, you know, that was another issue, and just the trauma, we were just seeing it all around us. And we started to name that, you know, this isn't just something you turn on and turn off. You don't, you know, you didn't see flames. You didn't, you know, you can't get that out of your mind, out of your vision. There has to be a way to really address this. Because again, I think there was like 6 really huge fires in those very short 2 years. And then we had the Paradise fire, and then, you know, the Delta fire, and I can name the other ones, but I'm trying to put them out of my mind, you know,
right,
kind of
thing. Right.
You know, but people really just were fearful and scared and didn't know how to deal. And it was not, people just lost their house. Mm. I myself, the fire came up across the street from me. We got out, we were fine. But again, that fear, I mean, that summer I was evacuated 2 more times. So 3 times that summer because of fires. So how do you deal with that? And name it kind of thing, but know what to do with it. You don't know what to do with it. And then all the therapists were, you know, booked. There was no, I mean, how do we deal with this? And I remember even stuffing my own emotions with that, because I was a leader. I was trying to help the healthcare community, not through just the evacuation centers in the short term, but how do we do the recovery and how do we, you know, address this trauma, et cetera. And I remember not dealing with it for a long time. And I happened to be at a conference with my colleague, Naomi, who did something similar. She led the healthcare response through the Santa Rosa fires the year before. And I use her actually as a resource, and I can talk about in a minute to get connected for Center Mind Body and Medicine. But I remember watching, she was asked to speak at this conference. And I remember watching her presentation and her showing the flames. And then I lost it. I couldn't control it anymore. I was sitting there like covering my, you know, I'm usually pretty in check. And I was like covering my eyes because I was bawling because I hadn't dealt with what I had experienced with, you know, the kind of trauma from that. Because I also not just did, I wasn't evacuated from my house. The Hank office was also evacuated. So I had no workspace or home space. And I was trying to coordinate this with off my cell phone, figured it out and did it. But, you know, it was a weird time, but that's when I knew, oh boy, you know, I started seeing other leaders starting let down, leaving their positions. And I think the emotional toll was huge. So I think it's something that we needed to embrace as a community, to name and to start doing something about it. And so that's when I reached out to my friend Naomi and said, how did you deal with all this trauma? Because, you know, and she and I, she actually was my mentor, and she just retired recently. And what I said to her at her retirement party was, thank you for helping me name this. And I was still tearing up even, you know, 4 years later, but she helped me through that. But it's something internally that I think a lot of people didn't name. So as a community, we needed to name it. And she said, you know, they had reached out, or they found out from Center Mind Body Medicine and Dr. Jim Gordon. And she said they were just getting going on doing this train the trainer model, because it was a community wide effort. It couldn't be just about health and human service providers doing this train the trainer. We needed to embrace this as a community at all levels. So we reached out, or I reached out to them with some support from the Shasta Health Assessment Redesign Collaborative, which the simple term is just our healthcare collaborative that's been meeting since 2006. They were all supportive of it because they were seeing this with their staff as well. And they agreed we got to do something. So we reached out to them and we brought them out here, I think the January of 2019, we had 150 people attend. It was an amazing turnout.
Yeah, and really responded to what a lot of people were seeking. I went to that. That's my first involvement with the model. When you were sharing, there's so much in there about the ongoing experience of grief and loss that our, let's say, United States culture hasn't really developed a lot of skills necessarily around both the recognizing and identifying and being with the feelings before we rush into doing. And you also bring in this theme of the what sometimes gets called compassion fatigue, where people are especially the kinds of empathic people who get involved in care work, find it hard to not take on all the feelings around them. Those evacuation centers were very emotional spaces where people were feeling a lot of really difficult feelings and not taking care of oneself, which is really central to the model that we'll be discussing. How do you explain to people kind of community level trauma?
Well, I think it's something that just doesn't affect one population. It's a geography. It's something, you know, like the pandemic or like the fires. It affected all of us. And we didn't have, it wasn't a subset of a specific demographic. It was everyone. And I think especially with wildfires, nobody's gonna, you know, disagree that it happened, where it happened, the impact directly or indirectly, it was huge. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, most people either dealt with it right away or didn't. Like myself, I stuffed it for a while because I just was in a leadership position and needed to keep it together. Like, and I know a few other leaders that did the same. It was, you know, and we would do that again, but it was difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, there was, like you said, fatigue. And so it affected all of us in some way, shape, or form. And then when these other fires, I mean, happen too, it kind of reignites the trauma from the folks that had the first fire or whatever, because now they're seeing other people that in their community, I mean, still Delta fire was in Shasta County that affected, you know, our emergency responders and all that. That just keeps it stirred up, I would say. Mm-hmm. So takes time. I think it takes various degrees of moving through it. I think some people, you know, just decided to leave, I think, Shasta County because they didn't want to, the visual was too much for them. So, you know, some people are living in burn scars and see it all the time. Some people built a new house and chose to deal with that way. The people who didn't lose homes, you know, again, like my neighborhood, we didn't burn down, but it was pretty close. It was across the street. The firenado came across the street. So it's, oh my gosh, you know, what if it could have been kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, and again, we were evacuated up here two more times that summer because there was other fires. So I think people, they choose different ways to handle it. I would say most people were affected in some ways because, again, if you weren't directly here, you probably had a friend or family or, you know, and you saw what happened with your family members. So it's, or your friends, and that could affect that relationship, or it's just not business as usual. It's not normalcy. So I feel like the trauma was very expansive.
Mm-hmm. And you spoke earlier about sort of the legacy of other fires. And certainly when I moved up here, the Fountain Fire was still very fresh, both in terms of landscape and in people's memories and memories from there. And also you allude to the fact that these larger community level traumas don't drop into states of perfection. Like there are economic challenges, there's mm-hmm. discrimination, there's experiences with violence or conflict that people have already experienced or are dealing with this overlay of this larger individual and community level experience or trauma.
Yeah, and it's funny, the Fountain Fire, and my in-laws were burned out. They used to live in Round Mountain, so they were burned out of that. They just decided to move out of state. But we really hadn't had any big fires since that.
Mm-hmm.
So we were feeling pretty untouchable, probably, or things were okay. Mm-hmm. And then, again, to have so many fires happen in such a short period, within months.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we had the car fire and then the devastation of the Paradise Fire right out. We're like, oh my gosh, are we going to be able to live here anymore? I think right. some people are wondering.
Right, right, right. I know for myself, for many years, and I can't say I'm completely over it, if there's another fire close, I find myself putting the things that I have repurchased in my little Honda Fit.
Well, you know, it's so funny is the summer of the car fire, I had like six boxes or baskets of pictures and documents, whatever. I am now down to one half of a basket. I spent that. I bought a Dropbox personal and I just scanned everything because that was one way I took control back.
Because
you're not, pictures are very important to me. And I'm like, you're not going to take that away from me.
Yep.
So I've done what I can there. And it's a little, feels a little better. And just, you know, just really clear about, like you said, the things I list in the garage, get this, 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 and this ready to go. So mm-hmm. trained up, so to speak, because I didn't want those feelings to control me.
Yeah.
They were controlling me for a while and I didn't want them. So mm-hmm. I'm like, how can I take back this, you know, feeling of this is my home. I'm gonna do the best to make it my home. And so that's what we did.
Yeah. Well, when Naomi was speaking about the work of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine, mm-hmm. what called out to you? What drew your attention for that being a possible resource or offering for our community?
That it wasn't a program. It's more of I don't know. You could say it's a program, but it's more of community owned and based. It helped acknowledge that this wasn't just for providers, it was residents, it's whoever needed it to go through it, that we all had the degree of trauma there. It was the train the trainer model. So even if somebody gets trained up, and we hope they will stay and they will train others, they're still going to probably give elements of that to other people in an informal setting. So there's in an indirect, I think, benefit to this, that maybe somebody doesn't go through all the total series, but if they have, and they're talking to residents and maybe that doesn't work for them, they're still going to potentially learn through those trainers some other key elements to deal. So they had a big initiative to get it going. There was buy-in from the community. So I think that's why we went so hard, because it was fresh with all the trauma and the fires, to get it up and running as soon as possible and to see it as a way to healing. So I think it was owned by a lot of different people. That's mm-hmm. what I'm gonna say.
Yeah. And you were definitely a leader in bringing that group of concerned folks together and promoting the model and helping to fund the training and support. Who else was involved in that to give a sense of the interest and support?
We have the health collaborative, and so that's comprised of the hospitals, the clinics, some CBOs, partnership health plan, and others. So kind of a health and human service kind of group of people. And they have a very robust integrated care committee. So we involve those folks into it. We had conversations with the community foundation, the North State, because there was also some other resources being, people were doing donations for that. And I think more for brick and mortar capital support, you know, just to get people back up and running. So we didn't want to duplicate efforts, or, you know, we just wanted to keep the two efforts separate. So we were just all working together. And then, you know, we had some different funders provide resources. I think we raised, almost $500,000 to get it going.
Wow.
Really quickly. And I apologize, but I think the Wellness Foundation, we had direct relief dollars. The Community Foundation did some Lutheran services, and I think even some money from the Mental Health, Public Health and Mental Health Services Act. And I apologize if I'm missing one. So that they all gave resources to help get this going. So we had a good amount of resources to bring the Center for Mind Body Medicine out here from Washington, D.C. And again, they had, I mean, they worked with groups like that experienced Hurricane Katrina and others. So they had a demonstrated track record of working with communities to do this. So we brought them out. We had 100, like I mentioned earlier, 150 people to the first workshop. And people were saying, oh my gosh, we need to do this here. And so I think we had we did a steering committee, folks that were involved from, selected from that group in conjunction with the original people that helped get the funding and all that. And it was underway. It started, you know, we brought the trainers out here, we did some trainings, and we started with the groups and everything. So it's been good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really to hear you go over that just the broad-based support for a resource like this, for the sustainability or the ongoing impacts, like you mentioned, that go beyond a program per se. Because there were wellness practitioners, community residents, there were a range of people who took that training, correct?
Yeah, a range of people all over the place. Yeah, so it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How, of course, the whole series will review and begin to unpack and share with listeners what mind-body medicine is, and we'll introduce folks to some of the practices so that the show is a resource, you know, for folks. But from your perspective, when you have your elevator speech to explain what mind-body medicine is, how do you explain that to someone unfamiliar?
I would just say it's really focused on stress relieving activities, you know, and things that you can do as an individual to move through your trauma. You know, like, you know, if you do something like imagery or visualization or doing artwork or channeling your energy into something positive, or the, you know, visualization, you know, making a concerted effort to change the scary images into positive ones, some types of meditation and things like that, that I think those are really helpful to one. And again, because they're going, I think some people don't pursue some of these things because they think they have to go to a therapist. This isn't therapy. this is how do I deal with this and not let my trauma get the best of me kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think embedding, you know, just it, that it's okay to be feeling trauma and to be with others also that are, you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's safe to learn these skills together. And guess what? Maybe you can share them with some other folks too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is that dual, when we invite people to participate in the 8-week groups or shorter versions, there's that real focus on self-care.
Mm-hmm.
And the acknowledgement that your caring for yourself is helpful to others, and you can share what you learn with those you love.
Yeah, and I think this is so important right now, since we had 2018-19 were the fires. 2020, we went into COVID. People haven't had a break. So I think it's more important now that we do this again or continue this, because people need to elevate and lift up and also feel that they can be happy and lighter again. Because I think we're heavy there with a lot on our shoulders for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know I can speak just if people are listening and say, yes, we do need more of it. We definitely are engaged in trying to support our facilitators to get there, let people know about the offerings, and also integrate where we can into organizations that want to provide these things to folks. You spoke about the need to let people know it's okay and helpful to feel difficult feelings and that there's support for navigating through those. And in some of my evaluation work or supporting providers in rural areas, there's often the experience of and talking about how many rural residents, for good reasons, have a very independent, self-sufficient, I've got this, there are people depending on me, I don't have time for, much like leaders, I don't have time to feel this right now, I need to go on, or, you know, maybe mindfulness or meditation, that's for somebody that lives on the coast or someone that's hippy-dippy. How do you see the providers you work with help people understand the benefit for them and also its compatibility with any way of approaching life, if that makes sense?
Yeah, and I guess I think I would say it can't be all on the providers. That's why it needs to be spread throughout the community, because our provider shortages are immense.
Very, very.
Our workforce shortages are immense. Mm-hmm. So I think this is something the community, yes, our providers are doing what they can with the limitations of resources they have. Mm-hmm. But that's why this needs to be a community-wide message and initiative. And it needs to be out there, mm-hmm. that, you know, that this is available, because, again, I think various degrees of providers, they have compassion fatigue. Again, not that they don't want to, whatever. They've been asked to do a lot in the last 5 years. But I just want to say they're doing it, plus the importance of really spreading this message and, you know, opportunities throughout the community. It's really important.
Well, and I completely agree. And perhaps I need to reframe the question. My interest is really about what you have learned about connecting with folks who have a tendency to be more independent, self-sufficient. I got this. I'm strong. don't have time for feeling.
Yeah, I guess I would say, and I apologize, I didn't get that, but I would say as time goes on, they're more open to it. You know, they get, you know, because I think they just get like, oh boy, yeah, I'm not feeling this, or this has gone on a long time, and I'm seeing, you know, a need to do more self-care or take a break or figure this out. So I think, unfortunately, as time goes by, there's a more openness.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a sense, sometimes when you're so immersed in the topic, it's hard to get a sense of what other people are thinking. Do you find or observe there's a more of a willingness to think about the concept of self-care or to recognize it's important?
Yes, we do training with more than ever around self-care, more than ever, especially most recently with COVID, but even with the wildfires too. Mm. Self-care is more on the top of the lists for trainings than it ever has. We've worked with Compassion Institute and others just to really keep folks in a good balance place.
Mm. Mm. That, well, and that's really encouraging, that moving away from the idea of a spa day to...
Yeah, it's more than that.
Yeah, really a holistic healing balance, being able to be fully present.
Yeah, I think more people like in leadership positions are using executive coaches when they can, or they have that opportunity afforded them, or community members are maybe working more with friends or spiritual leaders or things. I know for myself, I have my own little visual. It's up in my bulletin board, but like professionally, what am I doing to maintain me? I mean, personally, and then professionally, you know, how am I balancing that? And I really realized when I did this, I was so out of balance with the personal side. I was doing so much on the professional side. And when I named it and did a very deliberate plan to do more for me to fill my cup up, the difference was amazing. I mean, just again, and the visual, just, you know, right on my bulletin board, you know, what do I do? Check, 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 check. Oh, that's feeling pretty good. You know, like keeping more contact with friends, or, you know, doing some art projects or the gardening, or, you know, spending more time with my granddaughters, you know, just very deliberate and reflecting back on it. How do I want to spend? The biggest question is, how do I want to spend my time?
Mm.
You know, and just taking, it doesn't have to be very complicated, but just to look at, am I really divvying up Doreen the way I want to divvy up Doreen?
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that really, it comes back to some of the, you know, the mind body medicine work not being therapy, as you mentioned, and I coach as well. And one of the things that I like both in the mind body medicine and the coaching modalities is there's an opportunity for reflection, for recognition. Both have this underpinning of really when we're quiet, we know what we want, and we have some good ideas about how to get it. We are just so, whether it's trauma or responsibilities or old ideas. And so both of those, the mind, body, medicine, and coaching, really provide space for the reflection, questions or experiences that open up that opportunity to commit, and then practices like putting, not part of mind body medicine, but putting those reminders around us, you know, what works for us to bring us back to
and success. I think the biggest thing, you hit the nail on the head, is creating the quiet space. I mean, and that's, you know, I think for me, I can say I was way over committed and overtaxed, and there was so much going on. It was hard to create that quiet space, because even on my personal time, I had to catch up from all the things that I wasn't doing to balance that, et cetera. But creating that quiet space, and to feel comfortable taking that quiet space, and make a list. I mean, you know, write it down. It can, again, simple one piece of paper to say, okay, how am I spending my time? How do I want to spend my time?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's creating me angst or stuff in, you know, visualization, creating some, you know, one of my things I do, and this is silly, but I'm a Facebooker and I put a lot of pictures on the travels. You know, if I went to McLeod Falls, I was purposely putting beauty up in the North State because I wanted to say the North State is still beautiful, and fire didn't take all of the North State. You will see my background here on Zoom. It's my professional background and I change it up because I'm showing my colleagues the North State is still beautiful, you know, and that was my, that's kind of been a healing thing for me, is there's a lot here in the North State to experience. It's not all burned up. It, you know, it had a definite a cleanse. It's coming back. But we still have to, you know, appreciate the things that are still here and, you know, and keep putting those in front of ourselves.
Yes. Yes. I'm a runner and I find myself going into places other people avoid because there has been a lot of burning or blackened trees, but just the mountains are still there and there's green coming up and there's new life and it's still a place I love.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Yeah. I like those practices. You mentioned many of the things that come up in the mind body medicine groups, meditation or artistic expression, visualizations. Is there one practice that you particularly like? And I'm always interested in things that people didn't think they would like, but wound up really digging later on.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I would go back to the imagery and visualization and focusing on beauty and focusing on the things that are still here and putting those in front of me all the time and switching them up and telling the story also, not just to myself, but to others, that there's all these wonderful things. And also our community is also surviving. So like if I'm out and about, there's a great event, you know, I put, look at this great event. We're still okay. We're okay. You know, we've been through the ringer, but we're coming out of it and we're okay.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. What do you say to people who are just finding out about it, maybe are nervous to join, you know, Mind Body Medicine has these 8-week groups that meet once a week for 2 hours and they're shorter workshops as well. If someone's kind of intrigued about the 8-week group but are nervous, like, who are these people? Am I going to feel, you know, emotions? They're resistant for whatever reason. What would you say to them?
I mean, simply, this is not therapy. Nothing is wrong with you. This is a community of people that have experienced similar things that you will probably develop relationships with. You can check it out for yourself. Never want to pressure someone with it. Someone with this, they have to make sure it works for them, but you're not alone. You don't need to feel this in isolation. And this is an offering or something you can take advantage of to see if it works for you. And, you know, you just don't know what you'll find out. Maybe you're going to make a new friend. Maybe you're going to be a part of a new sub-community or community in our Shasta County that's working on this. I just think probably everybody takes a little bit different things from it, but they have a menu to take different things from it too.
And that aspect that you mentioned is really important. Well, there's several aspects you mentioned that is really important to many people. One, being in the support of a group where you can acknowledge something that you often keep to yourself in terms of what is hard, and recognizing that others have felt that or have their own things that they haven't shared. One of the aspects of that group that aligns with the it's not therapy and is that no one comments on what you share in the group. So mm-hmm. if I share something that's hard for me, no one's going to give me advice or tell me I'm wrong or say it's not that bad or interrupt me. I just have a chance to own it, share it, and then the next person does. And there's something really beautiful and supportive in mm-hmm. that method.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You might find that somebody has experienced something similar,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or and again, you're not alone. Again, back to you know, why I think back to rural residents, and they tend to say, I don't need this or whatever. You don't have to experience this isolation and really have those emotions pent up that could affect your health, could affect your relationships. And, you know, we all want to experience life, mm-hmm. you know, and there's so much life out there to experience. This is definitely a bump along the way. And again, it was much more horrible for some. So I don't ever want to, you know, minimize that. But the community is here to work together to keep moving forward. And I think we've taken some great steps. We still have more to go because I think, again, there's still some, you know, existing traumas, again, because we had the fires and the pandemic and all that kind of stuff. So I think we have more work to do. But I think we've got a good foundation to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we've talked about so much in this interview, but I typically like to end with a reflection. If there's anything else that we should have talked about or that came up for you when we were talking or that you wish I had asked you, anything like that to bring into this conversation as we come to the end?
No, I think your questions are pretty comprehensive, or our conversation. I would just say that I think this is very important work. It takes a good, you know, just an organizing body to do it, not a lot of resources, so to speak. And I think the impact is profound and also going to help you with other things that someone might some kind of trauma that they experience. It's just not fires and pandemics. It could be other trauma. It's a wonderful program. And again, just to being in that safe space to name it, to get someone to listen to you, to figure out some tools maybe to move through it. And again, maybe you can help someone else.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Doreen, so much for kicking off this series. You have been listening to On Mindfulness on KKRN, community supported radio out of Round Mountain and Bella Vista. And to learn more about what Doreen was talking about Hank or Shark, about the Shasta Resilience Project, please check out our show notes. There'll be links to all of those things and ways to learn more about mind-body medicine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for being a part of our first show. If you've listened and are interested in learning more about our offerings, about mind-body medicine in general, there's lots of ways that you can learn more. We've got a great website at ShastaSelfCare.org, and there are short videos about some of the practices. You can see who our facilitators are, and look at our calendar for upcoming events. On our show notes, you'll also find a link to register your interest if you don't find a group happening right away. And finally, you can follow us on Instagram at NorCalMindBody. And there on the Instagram site, you'll find resources, connections with other podcasts or sites that you might find helpful, and notices about upcoming groups and opportunities. We hope to see you at any of those sites in the future and look forward to sharing the thoughts and experiences of another facilitator with you on our next episode.